Good evening, everyone. Welcome. Venerable Children is traveling, and so tonight we'll do a review. And it's a really good opportunity to go through the preliminaries and in a little more depth, and then do a longer analytical meditation on the topic. And then after that, I'll highlight a few points from this topic, and then if there's any questions, those can happen at that point. So as always, we'll begin with breathing meditation, and tonight, since we're going to do a longer analytical meditation, we want to really pay attention to our posture. So we'll just begin with a little silent meditation first. And because if we jump into meditation without moving kind of to a neutral mind state, the meditation doesn't have much clarity or force. So it's helpful to do a body scan to release any tension. And so with our spine as the support, we can allow all the muscles of the body to relax with each out-breath. And relaxation is really vital. And so relax deliberately as you exhale, and set your body completely at ease. Loosen further with each out-breath. Feel a wonderful melting sensation as you surrender all excess muscular tension to gravity. Release tightness in the shoulders and soften the muscles of the face, the jaw, and the mouth. Open the forehead, allowing it to feel very wide. Relax all the muscles around the eyes. Let your body be still as it settles into progressively deeper comfort and ease. apart from the natural movement of the breath, remain as motionless as possible. Adopt an attitude of alert attention. Let your spine be straight, with the sternum slightly raised, and the abdominal muscles soft and loose. Feel the belly expand with each inhalation and contract with each exhalation. Continue relaxing more deeply with each exhalation. Maintain a motionless balance between relaxation and alert attention. Involuntary thoughts are bound to arise out of habit, rather than becoming caught up in them or trying to stop them forcefully. Simply release them with each out-breath. Let them go, as if with a sigh of relief. Settle the breath in its natural rhythm, releasing all control. Let the breath be unimpeded and spontaneous, flowing as effortlessly as possible. Let the body breathe without any influence of desires, expectations, or preference. With each out-breath, note any thoughts that may have arisen. Relax and let them go. If you find yourself caught up and carried away by thoughts, immediately relax, release all thoughts, and return to the sensations of the breath flowing throughout the body. If you find yourself falling into dullness or drowsiness, open the eyes to let in a bit more light, focus more closely, taking a fresh interest in the practice. When we visualize the Buddha, think that the Buddha is the embodiment of all the wisdom and compassion appearing in that physical form. He is the embodiment of the entire path and all the results of the path. Appearing in the form of Shakyamuni Buddha. So in the space in front of you, on a precious throne, both high and wide, supported by 8 great snow lions on a seat of a multicolored lotus, moon, and sun disks, is Shakyamuni Buddha. This whole visualization is made of light, not a statue or painting, but a living being made of light. Much like a hologram. Focus on feeling that you are in the presence of the Buddha. The color of his body is pure gold. On his head is the crown protuberance. He has one face and 2 arms. The right hand touches the earth, the left in meditation posture holds an alms bowl full of nectar. He wears the 3 saffron-colored monastic robes. His body made of pure light and adorned with the signs and marks of a Buddha. He emanates a flood of light in all directions. Sitting in Vajra posture, he is surrounded by your direct and indirect spiritual mentors, and by deities, Buddhas, and Bodhisattvas, heroes, heroines, and assembly of Arya Dharma protectors. Have the feeling you are sitting in the presence of a huge assembly of Arya beings and fully awakened Buddhas, and that they are all looking at you with kindness, compassion, and contentment. And in turn, at the thought of their compassion and virtue, a feeling of great faith and confidence and trust in the holy beings arises in you. Spend a minute to imagine what I just described and generate the feelings in your heart. For our motivation, think, I and all sentient beings who have been my mothers from beginningless time until now have continuously undergone the dukkha, or unsatisfactory circumstances, of samsara in general, and also the suffering of the three lower realms in particular. This universal experience of being caught in the cycle of rebirth is due to ignorance and karma. It's difficult to fathom the depth and breadth of this misery that we are all in. But think, now that I have attained a precious human life, so difficult to attain, and so meaningful once acquired, if I do not realize supreme liberation, in which all the dukkha of cyclic existence is overcome, if I don't become a fully awakened Buddha, then once again I will have to experience the various torments of cyclic existence in general, and those of the three lower realms in particular. Now that we have the three jewels before us who can protect us from this terrible situation, who can lead us out of it, for the sake of all mother sentient beings, let's have a strong determination to do what we can to realize Buddhahood. To this end, from the depths of our heart, we take refuge in the spiritual mentors and in the three jewels. And as we do so, we try to have as receptive of a mind as we can, with a sincere motivation that wants to practice, wants to learn. We also visualize ourselves surrounded by all sentient beings. Think of your mother of this life on your left, your father on your right. As far as you can see, you are surrounded by other sentient beings who, just like you, wants to be happy and doesn't want to have problems. But in spite of that wish, we find that problems come our way. So we, as we recite the prayers, we think about the meaning of the words as we go through these preliminary prayers and try to generate the feelings and thoughts expressed in the verses. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, Siddharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, Siddharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, Siddharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. And may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. And may all sentient beings not be separated from sorrowless bliss. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. In particular, for the sake of all mother sentient beings, by all means, I will quickly, very quickly, realize perfect, consummate Buddhahood. To that end, I will now meditate on the stages of the path to awakening by means of the profound practice of Guru Deity Yoga. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind, and present clouds of every type of offering, actual and mentally transformed. I confess all my destructive actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtues of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until cyclic existence ends, and turn the wheel of Dharma for sentient beings. I dedicate all the virtues of myself and others to the Great Awakening. And then thinking of the universe and everything beautiful in it, especially feeling the sky with clouds of offerings, things you consider beautiful and desirable, things you want for yourself but are now offering them in more beautiful form to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. First to create merit and to develop the feeling that takes delight in giving, and to free yourself from attachment to all of these things. Knowing that to really follow the path sincerely, we have to give up clinging to the objects. So imagine as we offer the universe and everything in it, multiple copies, and to all the holy beings that they experience great bliss, and you also experience a lightness inside because you're giving up your clinging attachment to these things. This ground anointed with perfume, flower-strewn Mount Meru, for land, sun, and moon, imagined as a Buddha land and offered to you, may all beings enjoy this pure land. The objects of attachment, aversion, and ignorance, friends, enemies, and strangers, my body, wealth, and enjoyments, I offer these without any sense of loss. Please accept them with pleasure and inspire me and others to be free from the three poisonous attitudes. Idam Guru Ratna Mandalakam Niryatayami. Now imagine a duplicate of the Buddha comes from the Buddha in the space in front of you, comes to sit above the crown of your head, facing the same direction as you, as you recite the requesting verses. A glorious and precious root guru, sit upon the lotus and moon seat on my crown, guiding me with your great kindness, bestow upon me the attainments of your body, speech, and mind, the eyes through whom the vast scriptures are seen, the supreme doors for the fortunate who would cross over to spiritual freedom, illuminators whose wise means vibrate with compassion, and to the entire line of spiritual mentors I make request. And then we think like this. This life with freedom and fortune, so difficult to attain, and once attained, so meaningful, will soon be destroyed. And death is certain to occur. No inner or outer circumstance can prevent it. I cannot add onto my lifespan, which is in fact shortened unceasingly, moment by moment. I'm sure to die without having time to practice the teachings while alive. Not only do I have to die, but the time of my death is uncertain because the lifespan of sentient beings in our world is uncertain. The causes of death are numerous, and those of life are few. And our bodies are as fragile as water bubbles. So the time of our death is uncertain. At the time of death, everything but the Dharma teachings is useless. No matter how great the affection and love that our circle of dear ones have for us. We cannot take a single one of those people with us. No matter how large a collection of lovely possessions I have or how much money, I cannot bring even the tiniest portion of it with me. I must even be separated from the very flesh and bones of this body I was born with. Therefore, what purpose does the attachment to these things of this life serve? Death is sure to come, but it is unsure when it will occur. Since I run the risk of dying this very day, truly I must do something to prepare for my death. So by way of preparation, may I practice the Dharma teachings purely, free of attachment to any of the excellent things of this life. Guru Buddha, please inspire me to be able to do this. In response to your request, five colored light and nectar stream from all parts of the Buddha's body above your head into you, absorbs into your mind and body, and into those of all sentient beings around you. This light purifies all negativities and obscurations accumulated since beginningless time. The light and nectar especially purifies all diseases, spirit interferences, negativities, and obscurations that interfere with practicing the teaching purely, free of attachment to the happiness of only this life. Feel you have gained the realization of death and impermanence, and feel how it transforms your mind. Your body becomes translucent of the nature of light. All your good qualities, lifespan, merit, intelligence, and so forth, all increase. Think in particular that a superior realization of the ability to practice the Dharma purely, free of attachment to the happiness of this life only, has arisen in your mind stream, and in the mind streams of all sentient beings around you. And so we think and visualize this way as we recite the Buddha's mantra. Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. Tayata Om Muni Maha Muni Soha. Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. Tayata Om Muni Maha Muni Soha. Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. So now that we've prepared our minds and bodies, and most importantly, made a heartfelt connection with the Buddha, we'll do the analytical meditation on imagining our death. So imagine you haven't been feeling well for some time. You've tried to ignore the symptoms, thinking that they will go away, but they haven't. So you go to the doctor for some tests. After a week, she calls and asks you to come into the office so that she can talk to you about the results. So now you've just met with the doctor to hear the results of the tests, and they aren't good. You have a terminal illness. As she's talking to you, you try to concentrate on her words, but it's very difficult. So you leave her office, but you sit in the waiting room just to collect yourself. The doctor said you have 3 months at most. Some time goes by, your body's getting weaker. You can't do the same things you used to be able to do. You watch your friends, your family, so full of energy, but your body can't do that anymore. Seems like everybody is going out, having a good time. All your friends are healthy, they're attractive. And you look at your own body, it's wasting away, looking quite unpleasant. Or time goes by and now you are completely bedridden. Simple things that you used to be able to do, like brushing your teeth, feeding yourself, things you did so often and took for granted, you can't do anymore. You're completely dependent on other people. Since you're lying in bed with not much to do, automatically you start thinking about your life. And so you begin to review your whole life, everything you've done in your life from the time you're a child until now. So as you look back on your life, what has been worthwhile doing? What do you feel good about having done? What has created good karma that will help you have a good future rebirth? And as you look over your life, what do you have regrets about? What weighs on your mind as you approach death? mistakes have you made? So before you die, who do you need to forgive? Can you let go of the anger and the grudge? Before you die, who do you need to apologize to? We've all harmed people. We need to acknowledge that and apologize to the person. Or even if the person is no longer alive or if they are unwilling to talk with us, we need to purify that karma. And we need to forgive ourselves too. And so come back now to being in your comparatively healthy body, knowing one day you will die. What is important in your life? Time you have left before you die, what is important for you to do, and what is useless for you to do? How do you want to live the rest of your life? Really focus on how important it is to make your life meaningful and make some definite conclusions on how you want to live. So this meditation really helps us to accentuate the preciousness of our human rebirth, because we can see how easy it is to get so complacent. And really, I don't know about you, but it's very easy for me to waste my time, to lose my focus. And when we do this meditation with a lot of focus and come out of it, everything looks a little more vibrant, and we can really appreciate that we're alive, and then we kind of renew our focus to make it meaningful. And this meditation, I think if it's the first time you've done it, it can be a little jarring or a little maybe fearful, I guess. But, you know, it's like anything in life, if we get familiar with it, then we get some ease with it and we can start working with it instead of either, you know, shutting down or pushing it away or zoning out. So it really, you know, all of those things don't really help us, because none of us, no matter how much we want to escape death, we will not. And it's really to our advantage, and it's a very compassionate act to train our minds to remember this, to be very familiar with it. And the time we have, since we don't know how long, we can make our life extremely meaningful. And then by extension, our death can become very meaningful also, with no regret, very peaceful. And all of this depends on how we live. You know, there's that saying about people die like they live, and boy, is that the truth. And so if we practice and keep in mind that our time is fleeting and practice the Dharma well, then at the time of death, we will have a strong mind and we can keep our mind very steady. And so it's helpful to just think about, Venerable said in the talk that she did on this, that to just imagine what it would feel like to have the realization of that your mind is so immersed in the fact that you have a precious human life that's meaningful, but that, you know, we are going to die, we don't know when, but we are so clear about Dharma is the only thing that's going to be worthwhile when we die, and we keep our awareness in that realization. And when you just even think about it, when I was thinking about it today, I thought, if I had that in my mind a lot, how much deeper we could go with our practice. How much deeper we could go. Our priorities would be so clear. And there would be a lot of room to have a lot of joy, I think, in the mind. They say that this is the most important meditation that we can do. They have that saying that if you don't remember death and impermanence in the morning, then you waste the morning. If you don't remember death and impermanence in the afternoon, then you waste the afternoon. And if you don't remember it in the evening, then you waste it in the evening also. So really, this meditation is going to keep us awake to our fleeting time here. And again, not to freak us out or make us, you know, all, you know, kind of discombobulated about this. And if that's where your mind went with it, then all that means is that you need to sit with us some more and do this meditation over and over again. It's just, you know, getting familiar. We know that about everything in life, actually. Everything that we've undertaken, if we get familiar with it and do it over and over again, it gets quite easeful. Quite easeful. So we don't need to have this panicked kind of fear about this. It's more about we've created the causes to have this precious human life. So it's kind of, I think of it kind of this way. The continuity of this mind stream that's in this body at this moment, the last body it was in, whoever that was, they worked very hard. They worked very hard. They kept their focus. They kept their mind in virtue. They practiced quite diligently. And I know that because I am in this form. I know that because you are also in this same form. If that wasn't the case, we wouldn't be sitting here in this form. So it's kind of like, you know, that concept about paying it forward. Now we want to pay it forward. We want to keep this momentum going. And to do that, we have to counter our complacency, which is, I don't know about you, but it's quite deep for me. It's very easy to get off track. It's very easy to get lost in the shiny objects and the meaningless affairs of this life, huh? And to, you know, just think about all of the petty circumstances that we've reacted to and spent. How much time have we spent on those things that make absolutely no difference other than making us miserable, you know? And so when we really wrap our brains around this, I think, and think deeply about this, get some familiarity with it, the mind can get quite peaceful. And I think that's because we have fully accepted the reality of what this life is like, that we will die. So we've, you know, radically accepted that, and then we've put our mind in this idea of, I'm going to spend my moments making it meaningful. And so that's quite a peaceful, really beautiful aspiration, actually. So that I think that's why it... And it also, when we remember death, it brings us into accord with reality. This is the reality. And so for some of us, that's the first thing we have to do, is wrap our brains around this and fully accept it. Spend the time doing that first. And if it's too hard to think of our own, then we can start with, others, other living things. You know, like in the meditation hall, you can do a death meditation every day on the fly that's walking around next to you. And, you know, in 15 minutes it's on its back, and then it's hardly moving, and then now it's dead. So you can do it with, you know, many different things in life. So that we can acclimate ourselves to this reality. This is what happens here. We don't have to get bummed out about it, and we don't have to get fearful about it. We have been born, lived, aged, gotten sick, and died countless times. Countless times. And if we just let go a little bit of all the grasping, we'll have that knowing when the time comes. So, not being prepared when the time of death comes, then that's what to be fearful about. So we want to prepare ourselves, because we can. We want to prepare ourselves really in a couple ways. One way is that we have a strong determination to make our life meaningful, and we have the path all laid out in front of us to do that. We know how. So that's just about practicing and not getting complacent. And then the second is that when we imagine our death, then we have the opportunity to see what our reactions are. You know, when you listen to me leading us through imagining our death, what were the places that were the most difficult for you? Where did your mind go? How did you react? What came up? What were you resisting? And you may have even had the thought, you know, I don't want to think about this now. I'll think about it when it's happening. That is not a good plan. That is not a good plan. Yeah. And we can practice all the time by acclimating ourselves to the fact that we are going to die. We have, really, if you think about it, we have little deaths all the time. You know, you can think of it that way. Huh? You know, sometimes people write about how aging is, you know, just a slow death. So if we keep accepting the reality of what is, then we start letting go. We start not holding on so tight. And we're able to then really acclimate ourselves to these changes as they come. We can also think about the times in our lives when something very unexpected happened, like gotten a auto wreck, or somebody, you know, a close person died or something. How did we react to that? Where did our mind go? How did our mind react? So those kinds of circumstances give us a little window into how it's going to be when we die. Because we can prepare our mind so that we can die in a very calm, clear way, peaceful way. We can do that. I mean, I've seen many people do that, many people that don't even have a spiritual practice do that. Now, how do they do that? Well, mostly because they accepted their illness, they accepted that they were going to die, they weren't holding on so tight. They were able to let go. They had already said their apologies. They had already let go of any regrets. They were accepting help from others when they could no longer help themselves. That's the kind of state of mind that allows for a peaceful death. And that's somebody that doesn't even have a spiritual practice. We have a whole spiritual practice that speaks and talks about death all the time and how to use it to your benefit. There's many, 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 many different teachings on this. And when we think about it, you know, when we die, our gross body dies, then we have access to these subtle energies in the mind. And we can use that subtle energy to progress ourselves along the path. So it's quite an opportunity. But if you have a mind of fear and denial and don't want to think about this, then that opportunity will be lost. So how can we prepare for our death? Well, I think if we train ourselves to think about death every day, then we start making choices that are meaningful, choices that make this life meaningful. We can do this meditation and also the 9-point meditation on death. Especially this one, we can do it frequently with a different kind of scenarios. Dying when I'm young, dying when I'm old, dying when I'm surrounded by family, dying when I'm alone, dying in the hospital, dying at home. So all these different scenarios to really acclimate our minds to this fact. And then the third thing I think that's really helpful is that we start cleaning up any unfinished business we have with others. You know, make the effort to clear up our relationships. And then when we go to sleep each night, our conscience is clear, our feelings are clear. We're not taking grudges or resentments or bitter feelings to bed with us. And that's important because we don't know the time of our death. We have no idea. I often think about one Dharma friend that used to go to Cloud Mountain. She was around my age, I think, maybe a little younger even. And she was a lawyer, worked very hard, came to retreat periodically. And she always said that she was so looking forward to retirement so that she could really put both feet in and really start practicing the Dharma. And really, not too long after that, she died in her sleep. She had a massive heart attack. So that always reminds me the time to practice is now. You know, it is not about, you know, when all the circumstances are in order and we have everything in line. No, life is messy. It's not ever going to be in line. So we practice now with what's in front of us. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, you know, this is the beauty of practicing the Dharma. If we practice this way and we think about making our life meaningful and follow the path, then whatever time we have until we die, we're going to get happier and happier and happier. That's what happens. If that didn't happen, I don't know that I would be here. Hmm? Yeah, that's what happens. So it's kind of win-win on all levels, really, when you think about it. And of course it brings up, you know, it's not easy. This path is not easy, is it? But life isn't easy. You know, what is life like at the time of death when you have gone through your life and there's really not a whole lot of meaning to what you've done? What kind of death does that end up being then? You know, that's a hard death, I think. And so we have the opportunity to go to bed each night with a clear conscience. You know, we can do purification practice every night. And then when we fall asleep, our mind is unencumbered by all of the junk, all of the rubbish that we carry. We can set it down. The other thing we can do is that when we are ill, we can practice letting people help us. We can accept the care of others with a joyful mind. If we don't start practicing this now, when we are really ill, we're going to be fighting people helping us. That is a terrible waste of energy. Yeah. So we really want to practice letting go. It's really about letting go, you know, this individual feeling, you know, this solid me, I can take care of it, let me alone, bug off, I'm all right. We have to set that down. It does not serve us on any level. And it doesn't accord with reality, does it? There's nothing that we do alone. That's our ignorance. So when we're ill, practice letting people help us. Even if 99% of the mind is saying, no, leave me alone. Open your mouth and say, thank you. I so appreciate the care, yes. And then as we do that more and more, then we will get familiar with that and it will be easy. Then the energy that we have when we are very ill and we are dying, we can use that energy to keep our mind in the Dharma. We can tap into the strength that we've been practicing. The other thing that we can do is plan for our death. What kind of care do you want? We can make a living will. We can decide what Dharma practices we want to do when we're ill. When we're close to death, we can ask others to guide us when we don't have the energy to do it. So it really is about embracing this. It's going to happen whether we like it or not. So we can deny it and push it away. And then we'll be quite shocked, won't we? We'll be quite shocked. That's not so helpful. So let's embrace it. Prepare for it. Also, you know, we don't know if our death is going to be slow or if it's going to be very quick. So the other thing you can do, whenever you are startled about something, train yourself internally to say Om Mani Padme Hum. Just make yourself say that immediately. Just anytime you're startled, anytime there's a fright, you know, anytime, you know, you're just, follow that always with Om Mani Padme Hum. That way, if you're in a car and there's a wreck and it's like this, you can say that. Mantra, which is very helpful because the last thing that we think about before we die really helps determine what next life we have, what rebirth. So if we say that, you know, the mantra is mind protection. If we say that, then that will be very beneficial instead of some curse word or something, you know. What's that going to do? Yeah. And then, again, be very specific. Decide what you want to have in your mind as your body and mind are losing power and as they are separating. So So where do you want to place your mind? You know, what do you want around you? We can choose that. You know, here at the Abbey, many of us have sat down and written out exactly how we want that to be. And I have great confidence that that will happen. So now I don't have to be fearful. You know, I know that people here know where that is. They'll read my plan. They'll see it. They'll do their very best to follow that. What could be better? Gosh, that is just wonderful, you know? So I think those are most of the points that I thought about. Maybe there's others in the room here have thought about other ways to prepare for death that I haven't thought about. Or if there's questions, maybe there's... I can answer some questions. Or even just some comments about how this was. I'd be interested to hear how that meditation was for people, what your mind did with it.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I... If I have anything that I'm not quite thinking about deeply is if it were something that came up like a terminal illness, or I was going to die in that kind of way, how to say that, how to tell it, how to share it, who would it be to tell, and what kind of mind would I really want to have in that? You know, the last thing I want to do is to be able to tell somebody that I have a terminal illness and I can't quite get it out of my mouth because I'm so upset about it myself. So that's something that I haven't really pondered much about, how to communicate something like that to my loved ones and to the community without feeling like I can't say it with the kind of clarity and wisdom and love that I want to say.
So how do you tell your loved ones about your like if you had a terminal illness when you know, you're so upset about it yourself that you don't even know how to approach the subject. I think, you know, the process is that we first have to tell it to ourselves. We have to again, embrace it. We have to, you know, so much of our life is about not accepting and pushing away the reality of what is. So, again, you know, we can practice every day to accept the reality of what is, which will then influence how we die to such a great degree, you know. So, you know, when you get, I mean, just think back in your life when you've gotten bad news about anything. What was the process? How long did you make yourself miserable before you accepted it? That's how I always think about it. How long did I make myself miserable until I dropped it? When did I let go? When did I accept the reality of what was? So that's the practice. And if you embrace that and do that, then once you have it clearly in your mind that this is what is, then you can move to, okay, how am I going to live the moments that I have left? And then there's an opening then to be able to tell others. It just comes naturally. It's not like this hard push to do it. It just comes, you know, when you do the work yourself first. And, of course, that's where we all have to start. Yeah. And then, too, I think with terminal illness, you know, oftentimes we have choices to make, you know. There may be options to, you know, take certain, you know, treatments to have maybe 3 or 4 months more, or, you know, maybe even longer time, or maybe even cure. Or so all of that you have to kind of wrap your brain around and see. So, you know, and all of that takes time, and it takes a lot of people supporting and helping. You know, that's what it takes. I don't think anybody makes those decisions on their own. You know, it's too hard. And, you know, you can also change your mind, you know. You start out one path and then, you know, okay, that's not going to work for me. I've made a different choice now, so then you go that way. And that's all fine, you know. It's not about the choices, actually. It's about how we hold them and, you know, how we bring ourselves to it. You know? Mm-hmm. It's true with everything. I mean, yeah.
This is helpful for me to maybe more clear about what meditations or things I'd want to do. I think when we filled out our
living wills.
Living wills. Mm-hmm. I did it more intellectually. Mm-hmm. This time I did it more experientially.
Oh, yeah.
So it was quite, what came up for me quite clearly was, well, I know that you, because I do the six session thing every day, that's just so big part of my meditation, but that I know that gets too long and needs simple things. Mm-hmm. And so the four immeasurables and the Shakyamuni Buddha mantra, to me, feel like the most, the things that resonate the most and would help my mind the most.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was nice to do this instead of like thinking, do it by experience or an experiential.
Yeah,
sense.
Yeah, good, yeah.
It was quite a difference from when I filled out those forms to sitting here and imagining myself and then what would really help me.
Yeah, what could you resonate with, with maybe not so much energy. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I have a question. So, I don't know where I heard this, but that if you're on a lot of narcotics before you're, as you're dying, that it can negatively influence your rebirth because your mind's not very clear.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to have the mind as clear as possible at the time of death is the goal. Yeah. And so then you have to kind of start thinking a little bit about pain and what that is and how, as a Dharma practitioner, how can we work with that and how do you work with that? All of those things, you know. And just what I know just from meditation is that, you know, there's some methods that you can use when your body is painful that decrease the pain instead of, and then there's other ways that you can relate to it that increases it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I create a story about the pain I have, oh, geez, here's this again, it's never going to go away, it's so painful, I hate it, there it is again, see, it's throbbing now. Gosh, I don't know that I can sit here, it's just too much. Well, then it is too much, yeah? Versus, you know, this is just a sensation. And I'm just going to, you know, really, with my awareness, jump right into the middle of it. Or just be right in the middle of it. And when I do that, it kind of disappears. You know, it jumps around a little bit and then it disappears. And, you know, it's not even so much there. Yeah. So I think, this is just my personal opinion, I think any kind of pain that the body has, we can manage as long as we get the mind out of the way. If we have a conceptual story about it, it can be the worst thing we've ever experienced. If we get that conceptual junk out of there and just experience the raw sensation, we all can manage that. That's manageable, I believe. That's been my experience in nursing and watching people with pain. That's been my experience in meditation. So that's how I believe. Yeah. We have to practice. We have to get a strong mind, you know, certainly. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, like on my living will, how I put it was, you know, if I am so agitated because of pain, give me an itty bitty teeny pinch. So work with it that way, you know, and, you know, see then, can I get my mind again, you know, can I, and, you know, most, it seems to me like, just from my experience, most pain can be managed with a lot of different things, not just narcotics, you know, how a person is positioned, how much hydration they have on board, you know, what their mind is doing, of course, all these things. So, do you have something, Jim?
Yeah, you mentioned that after you did the meditation on death and impermanence, that your mind was clear and bright, and I kind of found that to be true just now.
Yeah, everything gets a little more vibrant, you know. Mm-hmm. I think just because we have the awareness, we're more in line with reality. This isn't going to stay forever. And when I have that in my awareness, then I treat it differently. I relate differently to the moments. Yeah.
It almost seems like the more you might meditate on death, that the more comforting, I don't know, instead of fear, it's more comforting.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yep. And again, it's just familiarity, you know, and I know this for a fact, you know, all those years when I was in nursing and I worked in oncology and saw so many deaths, you know, when I think of the first ones I saw and then over the years, it got so easeful for me just because of the familiarity, you know. I could bring my attention to it without all of my personal distress. Well, we can do that with ourselves too, you know. There's no difference.
I think the other thing that these meditations on death have done is they've really put the, as you were saying, the other part of the meditation is how we experience these small deaths in our life already. Mm-hmm. And that when I can make this one work in my mind beyond into the feeling place, the things that I normally get upset about and get kind of cranky and annoyed with really do fall away. I mean, it really puts the small things in life in a very, very different perspective. And you see them as these little tiny dress rehearsals for this moment which you're going to have absolutely no control over.
Yep.
So, I mean, disappointments are kind of like that.
Yep.
I have found that it's really given my mind a lot more balance. I'm not so up and down like I used to be with the things that, you know, don't work out, but I see don't work out or are difficult.
We just had quite a few comments that was very helpful, and some people hadn't done this before or in a long time, and they really got into it, and they're really appreciative. And then we have a couple questions. How do we learn to use the subtle energies at the time of death?
How do we use the subtle energies at the time of death? Well, we have to practice the Dharma, and we have to have a teacher that can help us with that when we're ready. That's kind of an advanced practice. So we have to, you know, start out. And then, you know, a lot of those teachings are in Tantra, so it's a higher practice. So until you're at that place and at that stage, there are so many things that you can do that prepare your mind for death. If you have a strong mind and you're not, your mind is steady with whatever happens to you in life, then that same mind is going to be there at the time of death. And then when the gross mind falls away, then the subtle mind is available. Yeah. So that's kind of how it goes. But so we have to practice. Yeah. So, you know, we start where we are and then, you know, just keep in mind that. And for me, what that is when I think about that, because I'm nowhere near that either, you know, knowing all of that, but it really fuels my energy to practice so that I can understand that and be able to practice it in this life. And if not in this life, then in next life. You know, that's how I hold it.
I love one of the does our I guess daily complacency lessen the more that we think about this?
Yes. Yes, that's why it's the most important meditation. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, complacency, what's the basis of that? Self-centered attitude. I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. Don't bug me. Well, you know, that one runs all the time, doesn't it? So, you know, if we do this meditation, it jars us out of that. And then it comes back again and then jars us out of that. You know, so like when I'm walking around here and when I'm in the meditation hall, and you know, I pay attention to all the things around me that are dying. I look at the flies in the meditation hall. I observe, I make myself look at these things. Because my, you know, knee-jerk reaction is to not look. I make myself look because that's what happens. And then that brings me back again. Oh, you know, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? So these kinds of little things help, you know, keep us very aware of death and impermanence. Yeah. And, you know, if death seems too much, then impermanence, you know. The thing broke. Instead of getting angry that the thing broke, remind ourselves, of course, this is the nature of it. Anything that was produced is going to break. Anything that is born is going to die. This is the nature of everything.
I think, too, for me, it was a wonderful meditation. I appreciate it. And I could not... It was the most vivid re-experience of my mother's death mm-hmm. that I've had since she died. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't. I couldn't get to my own because
yeah.
the images of my mom's
yeah.
death were so clear.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a fabulous teaching. You know, when Zopa Rinpoche says, your mother just gave you, whoever he's writing to,
mm-hmm.
just gave you the best teaching.
Yeah.
You know, we have it around us all the time.
All the time.
If we look, just
yeah.
like you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, if we really look and let ourselves experience it, because it's so there.
Yep, yep. We can call it to mind or, you know, see it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And too, I think when we, like you said, you know, you didn't even get to yours, but what you got to is going to be so beneficial when you get to yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. That it's, you know, all good. Anything else? Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. So now let's bring ourself back to the image of the Buddha above the crown of our head, who has been supporting us and witnessing our strong practice here tonight. So now the Buddha melts into light down through the crown, reappearing at our heart chakra. Your body, speech, and mind become inseparable from those of the Buddha. So now let's dedicate. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends. May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it, have long life.
May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Peerless Supreme Spiritual Leader, Omniscient King of the Shakyas, the motherly Tara, Supreme Bestower of Longevity and Wisdom, the vast ocean assembly of sources of refuge, the grand propitiousness here and now for a nectar of benefit and bliss to flow, but with a clear mind of extensive learning gained from following the wondrous traditions of Tubten, the Able One's teachings, you bring clarity to masses of disciples with the light of children, the lamp of the Dharma. May your lotus feet remain unfaltering for a very long time. Through your dharmic deeds of hearing, thinking, meditating, and so on, place those who seek the liberated path in harmony through immaculate discipline. Please lead all beings to liberation with undeclining excellent qualities of scripture and insight, and establish them in a glory of eternal bliss. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West, flow